From the land of Grand Teton of our city in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 9th day of March, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net. We'll discuss, of course, what's been happening in the Middle East, how it is impacting crude oil and commodities. Then we'll turn our attention to the CDA, or the Center for Digital Agriculture's annual conference taking place on campus today, and discuss some very high-level heritability traits and how computer scientists on campus are using drones to find them. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast. We'll discuss what's been happening in the United States, South America, and how traffic is being routed around the Horn of Africa because Strait of Hormuz has been closed. We'll do that with Mark Russo of Everstream Analytics during this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day at $4.53¾, down 6¾¢. July 5½ lower, settled at $4.65¼. New crop December down 2¾. It settled at $4.81¾. By the way, went to $4.98½ on its high for the day. May beans $11.96¼, down 4½¢. July at $12.09, down 4. November beans $11.48¼, a penny and a half higher. They were as high as $11.72¼ for the day. Bean meal futures at $3.1350, down $3.70 on their settlement price. Bean oil 48¢ lower at $66.10. Wheat futures soft red at $6.03¼, down 13½¢. And the hard red, these are both the May contracts, at $6.19¾, down 3¾. The new crop July soft red, by the way, at $6.13, down 12¼¢. Live cattle futures in Chicago for the day at $4.42½¢ lower, $230.15 the settlement price. Feeders at $3.4655, down $5.07½, and lean hogs off 80¢ at $94.82½. Crude oil on the WTI, $94.46. That's up $3.53 a barrel at this hour. And the Brent crude. Oh, I don't have a number for the Brent crude. I was thinking I did. Oh, there it is. $98.70. Don't usually read that, Kurt. $6.04 higher. Kurt Kimmel is here. He is with agmarket.net. Thanks for being with us, Kurt. Okay, so crude oil under $100 again. It pumped through around 120 over the weekend. Lots of things happening in the Middle East that are having an impact on the commodity markets, whether they be the livestock, the grains, and or the metals, and of course the energies. Tell me about what you've been watching.
Giddy up, fire horse, Todd. You know the drill here. Yes, sir. I tell you what, it's just amazing how volatility just went through the roof here over the near term. And basically, crude oil traded almost $30 higher overnight, set the tone. We can't compete against a big hedge fund that has 24-hour staff or AI computer trading. They just went for it. And if they ended up buying the high, they might have to wait a little while to get out of that if things don't pan out. But what I picked up was the G7 countries were going to tap into their strategic oil reserves. And if that's the case, I think there's like 400 million barrels that could be freed up to help take the edge off the slowdown in this oil through the strait there. But there are some Chinese or some ships starting to creep through there. And if Iran and China are still on good terms, then these Chinese oil vessels ought to be able to get through there. And China is the biggest recipient of oil through that strait. Now, when you look at the gas pump and the price going up, that's why, you know, we are self-sufficient on energy for the most part. Drill, baby, drill. You know, strategic oil reserve. This is a prime example where it could come in handy. Then plus two, I'm not quite for sure the long-term plan included Venezuela oil production to come north if needed too. So a lot of moving parts, a lot of uncertainty huge, huge, huge price swings. Now, the beneficiary of that was last night's trade, where it pulled the grain market with it. Uncertainty, raw commodities in general is a place to go, and that's what we saw, a big movement into the grain complex. Just no hardly any selling, particularly in the overnight trade when most producers are not wanting to participate on Sunday evening in that move. So you had to have some open orders in there to take advantage of it. The biggest thing you can look at is pull up a price chart. Go to your favorite price chart page, and you'll see some huge price reversals to the downside. We made some new highs here on the move, closed lower in most of the commodities. So they're going to view the overnight highs fairly good, the resistance. Where we go from here, we were looking at May corn having some support here at this 449 area, D's corn 473, May beans 1175. November is 1134. Those are kind of some key areas to try to hold. Failure to hold those levels could result into some further price deterioration to the downside. But extreme volatility, it's use extreme caution. We've gone to using some covered positions to give you a staying power so you can kind of sleep at night. The other thing tomorrow, is the monthly supply demand report. Don't see a whole lot of change there on the U.S. number. The ag market team has their carry out corn 12102. That's down about 25 million bushel. Beans unchanged at 350 million bushels. Wheat unchanged at 931. As far as world numbers, that's probably where maybe we'll see some zigging and zagging on that Brazilian crop and Argentina crop, Todd.
I would say that from last week's all-day ag outlook, and this is the summary that Bloomberg took away from that and posted into their Bloomberg outlooks, was that volatility, this would have been prior, of course, to things really beginning to take place over this weekend, but that volatility would be high for commodity supply in the United States and around the planet will be high. And they also suggested that demand might lag in some part. I'm not certain that that's where you would land, but at least that supply for most commodities remains really relatively pretty good, and it's a distribution problem more than anything else?
It could be. I mean, there'd be some countries want to have supply on hand in case things really escalate. It's like a snowstorm coming. Everybody goes to the grocery store, so that could have some pent-up demand. But it only happens once in a while in a lifetime, and I remember the early 80s real well. We had stocks yeast ratio in corn almost 50%, stocks yeast ratio in soybeans almost 50%, wheat stocks yeast ratio is 100%. It was mathematically and physically impossible for the grain market to go up. Well, in 87, demand picked up in the 88 drought, and we went zooming to the upside. So even though we've got ample supplies, this market can do just about anything, Todd.
Yeah, don't give up on the fire horse, I suppose, huh?
Yes, sir. We're going to ride that, baby. We might get bucked off a time or two, but we're going to have an opportunity here to continue to reward the market as we go, Todd.
All right. Thank you much. I appreciate it. You have a good week.
Take care.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Monday afternoon to talk about the marketplace. You can hear that again, if you'd like, on our website, where? At willag.org. Artificial intelligence is changing how we see the world and how we look at the crops in our fields. And while agriculture has long used light reflection to gauge basic plant health, new AI tools are taking this technology a massive step forward. Associate Professor of Computer Sciences here on the University of Illinois campus, Mohammed El-Kabir, made a presentation this morning at the annual Center for Digital Agriculture Conference. I spoke with him about newly developed methods that use drones and AI to decode plant genetics from the sky, hunting for hidden, highly heritable traits that could build better, stronger crops for the future.
You were talking about something really pretty interesting to me this morning as it's related to artificial intelligence and using it to decode genetics of existing plants. And you, in this case, are using light reflection to figure this out. So most producers and others will be familiar with NDVI as, you know, how green is the continent and how much do we think that means for yield for corn. In this case, you're able to use some known genetic markers and what their reflection, I think, looks like from the light, and then to be able to hunt down new kinds of heritable or highly heritable genetics. Give me a broad overview.
Sure.
And then we'll talk more.
Sure, that sounds good. So NDVI, so that's something that's well studied, and it basically is, you have a, like you said, like a light reflectance spectrum, and NDVI only uses like two bands out of that spectrum, puts them in a formula, and it gives you something about how green a specific plant is or a specific region in a satellite image. What we wanted to do is, can we find new indices beyond NDVI, beyond other vegetation indices that have been, you know, studied before? And the way we wanted to do that is, we actually wanted to use heritability as a guide. So we wanted to find new indices, what we call synthetic traits, that have high heritability. And this actually corresponds to finding new traits from high-throughput phenotyping data, because it doesn't have to be only light reflectance. It can be any kind of high-throughput phenotyping data. It can be mass spectrometry. It can be whatever you want it to be. And the key idea is, because this is such a massive, in general, high-throughput phenotyping data is very massive, very large scale, and the key idea is, can we use heritability as a way to effectively mine the interesting parts of the data?
And you're using the AI to do the mining?
Correct.
How does that happen?
Yeah, so that's what we had to develop. So we had to develop a new, because there was no off-the-shelf AI that does this, so we had to develop a new method that does this. And we call our method H2, standing for heritability, optimization. And we needed to come up with new mathematics to do that. And there were two key ingredients. I'll just mention them very high level. So first, we had to ensure that the indices, vegetation indices that we find, that they actually come from a function class that is differentiable in its parameters. So this can be a linear model, it can be a neural network, it can be anything. So it's a very mild restriction. And then the second thing that we had to do is, the heritability computation itself also had to be differentiable. That one is a little bit tricky, but we managed to, you know, develop an algorithm that accomplishes both requirements. And because of that, we could actually optimize heritability and find new traits that maximize heritability.
What will you hunt for first? Or what are the things do you think that might be valuable to agriculture? Or maybe you're just in the fun stage of it, and what have you found?
I think we're always in a fun stage with research. So what we've found so far, so it cannot only be fun, so you also have to find something that is relevant. So we did a couple of validation studies. So specifically for sorghum, we had manual labels that were also generated using classical non-high-throughput phenotyping techniques. And what we found was that our new traits that we identify using our new method actually sometimes capture some of those existing manual traits, but also finds completely new things. And then the second question that we ask ourselves, those completely new traits that we identify, what do they actually correspond to? Like, how can we understand their genetics better? So what we did is, we actually went back to the SNP genotyping data, and we tried to find associations between SNPs and our new traits. And we did indeed find some hits. So that's very interesting. So it does show that there's like genetic basis you know, that our traits are indeed genetically driven. So going forward, I think to actually really do this at scale and to identify what our new traits really correspond to, we need lots of plants. We need lots of individuals. So right now, the data that we've looked at, it's only a small number of plants, relatively small. So we can improve our interpretation of the new traits by having more plants. So that's kind of like what we want to do going forward.
I'm going to summarize this. Let me see if I can get it right.
Yes,
so essentially, you're using light reflection, artificial intelligence, a set of marker traits of some sort that you know what the light reflection is like, to see if there are highly heritable traits within a series of plants, usually using a drone so it's close so you can see the plants. But you don't know what those heritable traits do, and you can then turn around and use snippets of the DNA that exist to go hunt them down.
Correct.
To see what these highly heritable traits that we probably have no idea how they are working or what they do are, and possibly if they can be used and manipulated in the future to make a crop better.
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
Thank you. I really appreciate you taking the time with me, Mohammed.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you very much.
That was Associate Professor of Computer Sciences, Mohammed El-Kabir. He spoke at this morning's CDA, or Center for Digital Ag, conference. He says as researchers continue to scale up this AI technology to scan thousands of plants at once, they're hopeful it will fast-track the development of more resilient and higher-yielding crops. Let's check in on the growing regions across the planet with Mark Russo now. He's at Everstream Analytics and has a look at the weather forecast. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us on a Monday again. Let's start in the United States. Begin with the rainfall in the Midwest and kind of work your way back through the Western Corn Belt from the east side, please.
Yeah, Todd. With recent rains across the Midwest that started last week, continued over the weekend, we've seen overall rainfall amounts ranging anywhere from 1 to 2 inches on the lower end of the range to some areas picking up 6-7 inches of rain. And with the rain activity here pretty evenly distributed across both the Western Corn Belt and the Eastern Corn Belt, again, with most areas in that range of 1 to 2 inches to as much as 6-7 inches. And that actually is expands all the way down through, you know, much of the Delta region as well. So all in all, it's been a very wet start to March, and that's been needed to help boost soil moisture and boost river levels here as we begin to head towards the new growing season.
And as you look forward?
Yeah, we see more rain on the way here. The pattern stays active. Likely not as widespread heavy rains coming up compared to what it has been. And much of this is due to we have cooler weather returning over the upcoming weekend and next week. But all in all, still some additional precip systems coming through and further improvement in water resources.
Anything in the United States that you're concerned about?
Well, we are watching the Plains hard red winter wheat belt situation. Those areas here have trended drier and look to stay on the dry side with no meaningful rainfall over the next 2 weeks. Also, temperatures look to stay warmer than normal there. So evaporation rates are quite high, and that will draw down soil moisture as we move through the next several weeks. So not a big problem now, but definitely something to monitor.
Would you define it as a typical transition from winter to spring?
It's been quite volatile, which this is a time of year when volatility does increase with temperatures and precip trends. But overall, it's been a bit more extreme, or that volatility has been amplified a bit here due to what we're seeing with this kind of clash of anomalous air masses. Still the bitterly cold air to the north, in the northern U.S. and Canada, but then also this anomalously warm and very humid air mass that moved into much of the southern and central U.S.
Is the bitter cold likely to return at all?
We don't see the big-time cold coming back in, but coming up this weekend and next week, temperatures will be dropping back down to slightly cooler than normal levels across the Midwest and much of the eastern half of the country. But the most anomalous cold still looks to stay up north. Upper Great Lakes into Canada is the main area, with no indication that that plunges all the way south down to the Gulf Coast.
Turn your attention to South America. What are crops like there for the day and the weather forecast?
Yeah, crops continue to be in good shape, whether that's late developing corn and soybeans in Argentina or late developing soybeans in far southern Brazil and Rio Grande do Sul. Buenos Aires province in Argentina has been drier lately, but they have rain opportunities coming up to boost soil moisture and either stabilize or improve crop conditions there. And then for soybean harvesting, safrinha corn planting, and overall crop transportation across Brazil and parts of Argentina, the outlook looks favorable. We see no sign of any excessively wet patterns that would bog things down. And whether that's for road and rail networks here in Brazil or for at port operations as well.
And before I let you go, because you work for a logistics company and handle the weather, I'm wondering, when you look at a shipping traffic that would normally go through the Strait of Hormuz that has to be routed around the Horn of Africa, are there issues that they'll be facing?
Yeah, we do see issues at times here across that area in around South Africa and the Cape of Good Hope. Over the next week to 10 days, overall, weather conditions won't be extreme. There will be gusty winds at times, but at least the pattern is relatively tranquil over the next week to 10 days. But this just follows some very stormy weather here just over the past week. And we've even seen big disruptions in around areas of like Durban and Richards Bay in South Africa. And as we head towards basically April, May, June, and beyond, that tends to be the time frame of a biggest storm and rough sea risk in around that part of the globe where more shipments are being taken now.
Hey, thanks much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics and joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Don't forget to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org, where you can find information from the Ag Economist, the Crop Scientist, and the Animal Scientist, right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, along with our daily radio programming. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.